Welcome to Mish Music Talk with Michelle Weir, in powerful conversations with singers, players, vocal groups, and industry professionals from around the world. This podcast isn't just about the music, it's about life and who the artist really is on the inside.
Hello, and welcome to the Mish Music Talk podcast, episode 13 with Ben Bram. Somehow I knew that this conversation with Ben was going to seem like it would just fly by, and it did, because Ben is easy to speak with, very personable, friendly, and he gets right to the point about things in a good way. So it feels like there's a lot of focus, content, and direction in the conversation. Given his youthful age of just under 30 years old, he has done a whole heck of a lot for and with the a cappella community. So you're going to hear all about his work with the Pentatonix and his work on some TV shows like The Sing-Off. But more importantly, you'll learn about him as a person, how he came to be pretty much on the cutting edge of contemporary a cappella for about these last 10 years. Ben is certainly a builder, an ideas person, multi-talented as a singer and arranger, and he certainly seems to have a great business sense, and I can vouch for his great ethic of biz follow-through, case in point. We just earlier finished recording, and he was at his house, I was at mine, we were on Skype, he recorded on Pro Tools, and when we finished, about three quarters of a second later, he sent me the file just immediately. And previously, he had sent me his promo materials almost like he was reading my mind. I'm not even sure if I asked him for it before he sent them. So, though maybe I did. But anyway, he certainly got good efficiency and get it done skills. All of this has added up to success for him. And this year, he has been awarded a Grammy for Best Arrangement. So we're going to start by playing a partial recording of a Pentatonix track called Daft Punk. This is arranged by Ben, and it's from the CD PTX Volume 2. Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag and drop it, zip, unzip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, call it, jam it, lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, back it, switch it, fade it, name it, write it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, touch, rename it, touch it, print it. One more time.
Like the legend of the Phoenix, yeah. All ends with beginnings. It keeps the planet spinning. The force from the beginning.
Hello, Ben Bram.
Hello.
Great to have you here on this podcast. And, you know, most of the other people that I've interviewed for the Mish Music Talk podcast have been people I have a lot of background with and I've known in some cases for many years. And in pretty much all cases, it's folks that I have met at least a number of times and had a meal with and so on. You and I have met on occasion here and there only the last 4 or 5 years, so we don't know each other that well yet.
Yeah.
And I am very happy and excited to get to know more about you. And
for sure, likewise.
I mean, I'm kind of curious if you happen to remember where we first even met.
I know I don't know when we first met, but I know we talked at the Real Group after party. From the Real Group show. And then before that, you may have come to USC at one point, I think, when I was working with Kristen Korb and Kathleen. You may have come to Crescendo one day, or maybe our the vocal jazz people and just kind of stopped by.
Okay. So were you singing in the ensemble?
Yeah, I sang in Crescendo Jazz Choir and was also working with Kristen for private study.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just saw her here in Los Angeles. She was here from Denmark on tour.
Yeah, I haven't seen her in a long time.
She's doing so great.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I've been really impressed, Ben, with what I know about what you've been doing in the a cappella community. It's been a lot. You know, all of your work with various TV shows like The Sing-Off and The Voice, your involvement with movies like Pitch Perfect, and of course your background with SoCal Vocals at USC, which is, you know, this awesome award-winning a cappella ensemble that went on to turn into the group that is now called the Pentatonix. Mm-hmm. And of course, I understand you're still working with the Pentatonix.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's pretty cool. And I'd love to know how that happened. There you were at USC. You were part of the SoCal Vocals. You were arranging for mm-hmm. them. And how did the Pentatonix start out of that?
So I was arranging for SoCal Vocals, and we were kind of just doing our thing, doing ICCA. We won the college championships a couple times, and that's actually what led to my sing-off job. Because Deke Sharon and Ed Boyer, who were working for Sing-Off at the time, kind of knew about me, knew that I was in LA. And then after season one of the Sing-Off, they needed someone local who could kind of come to help arrange and coach all the groups that were on the shows for season two. So I talked to Deke, and he had me interview with the showrunners, and that ended up happening. The day that I graduated was the day that I got the job officially. So that was pretty lucky time-wise.
Good timing.
Yeah. And as far as Pentatonix goes, yeah, so I worked on the Sing-Off for one season, for season two. And then getting ready for season three, I was helping to put groups together. And Scott Hoying had just come to USC after I left. And he was in SoCal Vocals. And I knew about him. I knew he was amazing. And I also knew that he had two friends from high school, Mitch and Kirstie, and they had all sung in high school, and they had their little trio video that kind of went viral for a little bit. And so I kind of knew about them, and I was thinking how awesome it would be to kind of put a rhythm section, a bass singer and beatboxer with them, and kind of create this five-person supergroup. And, you know, I was talking to Scott and other friends in SoCal Vocals, like my friend Rachel. She was talking to Scott and saying, you should totally do the Sing-Off. And then Scott and I met up and kind of just started talking about it and how we would go about it. And we were looking for a bass singer and a beatboxer. And I knew Avi because I had gone to a Westminster chorus rehearsal and he was there. And I heard how amazing he was. And I was like, we need to get this guy.
And just a quick side note about Avi. I was reading up, you know, about the Pentatonix and stuff in preparation. And I realized that he was from Bruce Rogers' group at Mount San Antonio College.
Right.
Syncopation years ago. It's amazing how, you know, our current educational system is actually supporting a cappella.
Totally.
People moving on to do really good things.
Yeah. And also, Avi was in From Out of Nowhere, which was the kind of student-run pop group at Mount Sac. And he actually competed in ICCA. I don't know if it was the same year, but it was kind of alternate years, and we knew about each other. So I knew that his group was competing. We would go see them. So we were kind of in and around the same circles for a couple years there. And then I gave him the call, and I was like, hey, you know, we have this group looking to start, and sent him the video of Scott and Mitch and Kirstie singing. And he was like, yeah, totally. And so kind of we had the four of them. Mitch and Kirstie were still in Texas and Oklahoma at the time. So they only flew out the day before the audition. And Kevin, we found because my friend showed me a video of him playing cello and beatboxing when I was visiting them in Oregon. And so I was like, who is this guy? This guy's amazing. And I called him. He was at Yale at that time. And he was like, okay, sure, totally. But I can't afford to fly out. So Scott and I split the cost of flying him out for the audition. And the five of them only met the night before they tried out. So
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So they had already kind of, Scott and I had done an arrangement. We kind of worked it up, sent them parts. and everyone learned it, but then they actually came together to rehearse, the five of them, and meet for the first time, some of them, just one day before they actually auditioned.
That is awesome. That's a good story. So All of that just in preparation for auditioning for the show, right?
Right.
Wow. So, okay. So it sounds like you were serious about this, to say the least.
Yeah, we were, you know, everyone was kind of going for it. And I don't know that they really had a huge future plan at that point. They just, you know, Mitch was just graduating high school. Kirsty and Scott were first year of college. Kevin was, I think, just graduating college. And so they were all kind of, okay, this sounds fun, let's do it. But I don't think any of them really had any clue of what it would become.
So obviously that group won the sing-off that year, which was what year?
That was season three, 2011. So they all decided afterwards they would move to LA and really try to give it a shot. So they got a manager and they started posting YouTube videos, really casual ones, just in their kitchen, filmed on their iPad. And then they had their friend Ryan Parma start filming videos, and I would record audio and get like a better quality for everything. And at that point, they had like a little label swap after the show, because Epic, who they were signed to after the show, dropped them basically. And it was... dropped them. Yeah. There was no recording. There was nothing. Nothing ever happened with that record contract. They were kind of just stuck in it and they had to get out of it. So they ended up getting out of it and going over to Madison Gate, which is a subsidiary of Sony Pictures. And they mostly do soundtracks, but they were like, okay, yeah, this is a good like short-term solution just to get your music out there and not have anyone dictating anything and not being in your way creatively. So they were with them for a few years, and then a couple years ago they signed to RCA, and so they've been super great, and they've been with them since and kind of helped them take them to the next level. But back to your question, how they did so well, it really came from those YouTube videos and the like creative new arrangements that they were doing and that I was doing with them. The evolutions really helped, just like these monster medleys. A lot of things were reposted, Huffington Post and all these websites to kind of keep that traffic going.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like basically you and Scott put the group together initially.
That's right.
So what is your current affiliation with them? Obviously, you're still working with them. You're arranging with them. I know you're involved in your summer workshop with them directly and so on.
Right.
So are you part of their contract with their manager, or are you just a sort of outside advisor that's sort of a soulful,
right,
soulfully connected person to the group?
Yeah, I'm more of an outside person at this point. So I'm not directly in their record deal or anything with their manager. I'm basically someone who they hire to help out with certain aspects of what they do. So for instance, their most recent tour, I helped put the Pro Tools sessions together to get click in their ears and pitches in their ears for each song and kind of map all that out. I arrange with them whenever they need to, but they also do a lot of arranging on their own when they're on tour. I went with them on their last tour to record them on the road, kind of recording demos for the most recent original album that they released. So I was in a little studio trailer that we rented, and they came in before shows, after shows, arranging, recording these demos. And I record them and arrange with them and then whatever else they need me to do.
And congratulations on your Grammy Award.
Thank you.
You won the award for Best Acapella Arrangement. That's quite a feat.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was a real honor.
Yeah, that's great. So speaking of arranging, I'd like to get into a little bit of the musical nitty-gritty about how that works for you, especially when you're writing for them, because it's a venue where people can go hear what you're saying now and then go listen to the arrangement easily.
Right, for sure. There's actually a really cool breakdown. This guy, I forget his name, Bruce something maybe. He's kind of a classical music expert for a radio show, and he breaks down one of our arrangements. He takes the harmony apart, he takes the rhythm apart, and kind of shows kind of what makes it work. And he comes up with things I never even would have thought. So just if I'll find a link to that and I'll send it. You can post that.
Okay, sounds good.
But yeah, so the arranging process, it's different for a lot of different songs. So a lot of the time, the group will come in with some kind of vibe they want for a song, maybe a beat, some kind of idea of how they want it to sound. And then we'll kind of sit down, and a lot of it happens in the room. So I'll usually work with two or three of them at a time on a particular song. And we'll start, you know, with a beat. We'll start with how the melody is going to sound, what kind of inflections they're going to have on it, how it's going to be a little bit different from the original version if it's a cover.
Who chooses the song?
The group does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they... You know, now it's between them and the label and the manager. Kind of everything they do, they have such little time these days that everything they do kind of has a purpose and is very carefully chosen. Back in the day when they were kind of just here making YouTube videos, we would just kind of brainstorm things and just do whatever they felt like.
What in your background has allowed you to know how to arrange for vocal groups? Because I know that you grew, based on my sneaky research, I found out that, you know, you had studied classical music when you were young.
Yeah.
And you were loving that, and you were wanting to be, I think, a conductor.
That's right. Well, that was very young. When I was 5 years old, I wanted to conduct. I started piano at five and was just doing classical. I never really considered myself a serious classical musician, though. I always got a little bored with it, a little antsy. So as soon as I started learning chords and playing around with fake books, like that's really what I loved, and just kind of noodling. So I played piano on and off from, I took lessons on and off from like 5 to 18. And then beyond college too, I did some jazz piano with David Arnay. And I played French horn in orchestras and trumpet in jazz bands and jazz ensembles all through high school. And I never really sang, but I was always kind of being musically creative. I composed string quartets. I arranged brass pieces and pieces for the jazz band. So I was always just kind of hungry and doing stuff and fiddle around with voicings and horns and strings and all that. So I always kind of was interested in that. I also wrote a musical when I was in high school, so I got to arrange some vocals for that. And I always love working with singers, and I love arranging for singers. So that was kind of my first opportunity to really do that.
Wow.
And then, so I was mostly doing instrumental music before college. And then once I got to college, I kind of knew I wanted to join an a cappella group. It always looked really fun. Never had time to sing in high school, so I auditioned for SoCal Vocals, and I did a transcription of Imogen Heap, Hide and Seek, and I brought it into the audition with me. And I was like, I know I'm not the best singer, but I can arrange. I never really was taught how to arrange for vocals specifically, but you know, I took music AP music theory, learned about voice leading, learned about harmonic structure, did composition lessons. So I just had kind of a strong musical background that would allow me to kind of, you know, figure out what I needed to do to make things work with voices. It was a lot of guess and check too, arranging for my a cappella group in college and kind of seeing what worked and what didn't, going back and fixing things and just getting better and better every arrangement that I did.
Mm-hmm. So at some point, I mean, there you are with the Pentatonics. You guys are sort of working out the concept, probably the overall mood, the vibe, the energy, and then the groove, right? Mm-hmm. And you set that up. And then at what point do you actually just write it down and write all the notes?
A lot of we'll write it as we go. So, you know, we'll start coming up with a groove. I'll usually write out the melody first, I'll write out like a really simple bass line just so I have the chord structure there. And then sometimes I'll write, sometimes the bass line will come first. Sometimes the background parts will come first. But we more the background parts usually are last though. And then I'll kind of make adjustments as I come up with things. And as we're coming up with things that we really like, other things have to change. So it's just kind of a puzzle that's always shifting. But I'm usually writing things out as we go in that process.
Mm-hmm. And here's a potentially uninformed or, dare I say, dumb question, but where are these arrangements available?
They're not available. There are a lot of transcriptions online of that other people wrote out, but there's no official PTX published songbook, anything like that. They've been working on it for a long time. Not actually working on it, but they've been working on making it happen for a long time.
Are they trying to get a print license agreement?
I don't think anything would be really that hard to do. I think it's just low on the priority list, honestly, for them, just because they have so much else going on. Like I asked their manager, I'm like, hey, you know, it'd be great to get an official PTX songbook with the actual arrangements. And it's like, yeah, like, okay, we'll do it. But it's hard when they're kind of touring all over the world. There's so much else happening that we haven't really gotten there yet.
Hmm. Well, that's a really cool thing. I like hearing that story. I don't know that it's that common for someone like you and your partner, Scott, you know, to just have this insight and this gem of an idea and then follow through with it so well to, you know, just assemble a group of people and in some cases just reach out and handpick people, you know, like whoever it was from Yale.
Right, Kevin, yeah.
Kevin, so that's...
Yeah, you know, it took a lot of time and it was frustrating and we had a few other beatboxers that we tried out before we found him. And, you know, when we found him, it wasn't easy. He was, you know, he was on the other side of the country and we were like, okay, like, is it worth it to fly him out? There must be someone locally that we can find, but you know, I really trusted my gut on that one and really like made a case for him. Just seeing him play cello and beatbox so musically, I think is really rare. Yeah, there are a lot of beatboxers who are really good, but not a lot of them that really know how to fit in a group and fit what's happening around them. A lot of beatboxers are kind of solo acts and they do their thing and do a lot of really complex combinations, but having someone who really just can fit into something is really rare. So I sensed that from him when I watched his video.
Mm-hmm. You know, when we were talking about you being a precocious young musician at age, whatever that was it five, you said?
Five, yeah.
Crazy. It reminds me of this YouTube video that was viral some years ago of this little tyke. He must have been 5 or 6 years old. And he, you know, at somebody's house and he stood on a podium and he conducted this entire movement of a symphony. I don't remember what it was, but it was something with great passion and gusto. And I mean, he knew every nuance of the whole symphony.
Yeah.
And he was like toppling around, you know, not even keeping his balance while he was doing it. But, you know,
I've seen a video of very young conductors. It's a pretty cool and kind of weird thing to see that. But that definitely wasn't me. I didn't have the ability at that point. I just had the dream. I was like, oh, that looks fun. Like my parents would take me to the LA Phil and I would see Essa Pekka just with his crazy hair. And I was like, oh yeah, that looks fun.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Do you like to still hear classical music sometimes?
Yeah, I don't, you know, go to see it as often as I'd like, but I still really like classical music for sure.
You know, it's really great that we do around here in LA area that, you know, since you're here too, you might like this. I, in all your infinite spare time, of course, you know, is to go to the Bowl. Hollywood Bowl in the summertime and go, I like to go up to the cheap seats. They're like, I think $17. And you just climb up to the top on a summer night on a I think it might be Tuesdays and Thursdays is classical, and just bring your bottle of wine and your gourmet picnic dinner.
Oh, yeah.
And there's plenty of sitting space and room and quiet, and you're under the stars and just hearing this classical music. It's a really great way to spend an evening.
Oh yeah. I love concerts at the Bowl.
Yeah.
Super fun.
Yeah. Well, you obviously are a singer also. As a matter of fact, we had to postpone our talk today twice because of a commercial that you are, you know, in line for possibly getting, that you're sending in auditions or going in for auditions or whatever, and busy doing some, I think, I guess, national commercials and probably some film and TV or...
Yeah, it's not often these things happen, but actually it was my former internship, which is a commercial music house called Hum in Santa Monica. So they called me up, and there's a National Honda commercial that's going to be 5 different a cappella songs, and then they're casting 45 singers for it. So I'm kind of involved on both ends, submitting demos for the 5 spots and also going into audition to be in it, hopefully. So this kind of just came up randomly. But yeah, it's really fun being in LA and just kind of having random things happen. And I got to sing backgrounds for Kesha a couple weeks ago, very randomly. She was working with Ben Folds. Mm. And Ben kind of asked my friend Kenton to come, and then Kenton brought me along. So it was just lots of fun, random things.
Nice. I will own up that I don't know who Kesha is.
She's just a pop starlet. And there's a whole controversy with Dr. Luke sexually assaulting her and her deal with Sony. And it's a big, big thing right now.
I see.
But yeah.
Yeah. You just seem like this sort of... from where I sit and from what I know about what you're doing, it's like you're kind of a golden child in a way that had the perfect, you know, cauldron of events and talents and motivation and business smarts to make a whole bunch of things happen, you know, right in the last, I guess, 10, 15 years tops, right? I mean, you're not... Mm-hmm. What are you in your 30s?
I'm 28.
You're
so
28.
I graduated college in 2010, and that's kind of when all that was happening. That's when the Sing Off happened and Pitch Perfect shortly after that. And that was kind of the time when a cappella was kind of gaining more exposure, and it was becoming more cool and less seen as this nerdy collegiate thing.
So you're an ideal role model for a lot of people, and I'm sure, you know, people that know you, and which are many, look up to you. And I wonder what you would like to share with people about all of the different elements of what it takes to start from, I'm a college music major, university music major, to I'm creating this on-campus group. Out of that, I'm creating this big group to audition for this major television show competition. And out of that, I'm going to be getting work for doing all these other things, plus doing sideline work as a singer, etc. What, including your business sense, including your work ethic, can you speak to what would it take for somebody that would like to follow in those kinds of, you know, directions?
Yeah, totally. And like you said, there are really a lot of elements at play here, not least of which is kind of timing and luck. But besides that aspect of it, I just, you know, was really passionate about it and really loved working with singers and being in an a cappella group. And it wasn't necessarily anything that I was expecting to be a career. When I was in college, it was just for fun, and you know, I always wanted to pursue music, but I never expected it would be like this. But really, yeah, it was. I mean, my background is an instrumentalist, and you know, my background in theory and oral skills and all that kind of set me up to be at an advantage in my college a cappella group, where a lot of the people were singers and not as musically inclined. And then my background in the college group kind of set me up. And just being in a group that was so accomplished and going to the national competitions, kind of that kind of put me in the eye of Deke. And so kind of, yeah, everything did happen really perfectly. But it was, there was a lot of just passion and work going into it. So the main reason why I got the sing-off job, which really led to everything else, was that there was a group on season one of the sing-off, and I wasn't working for the show yet, and it was a group of alumni from SoCal Vocals, and they needed arrangements for the show. There were a bunch of other alumni that were arranging for them, and they all kind of lost focus and didn't really care. And I was the one who was just really on it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to arrange as much as I need to for you guys. Whenever, however, you know, they needed stuff on a very tight deadline. Producers would tell them a new song they had to sing and they had need an arrangement in a couple hours. So it was a lot of that. And it was a lot of just, you know, me putting everything else aside. I left my internship early one day because I had to arrange something. You know, things that you ordinarily wouldn't really, like, you know, I had to shirk other responsibilities to kind of make this happen. And so that was just that choice that I made in that moment, saying, this is important. I'm not getting paid for it, but it's, this could lead to something. And so, yeah, that kind of put me in the position to be hired, to show that I could do that work and do it quickly. And well, and when I went into it, I never thought that I would be able to arrange anything that fast. I had only arranged for my college group, and I would noodle with it for a few weeks, and I never really had to arrange anything quickly. I didn't know that I could. So going under that deadline of we need it in 3 hours forced me to get it done. And that was the most valuable thing that could have happened.
That is so interesting, because Roger Treese and I were just speaking recently on a podcast, and we were talking about the voluminous hours it can take to arrange. I'm not sure everybody always understands that. I mean, if you're trying to do something really novel and creative and very unique, the creative time can take a lot of time.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the idea of arranging fast, you know, getting a flow going. And in some ways, to me, the better arrangements I've done have been the ones where I didn't second guess every single note that I wrote, but I went with the flow, and I got some speed on it so that my critical brain stayed out of it a little bit longer in it, and it allowed for the more intuitive self to just do it naturally. Is that kind of how it feels for you?
Yeah, I mean, speaking to the intuitive self, you were saying, I think that's so important, especially in the pop a cappella world. Pretty much all the good stuff comes from that seed. And it comes from, you know, Scott in the room singing a cool riff, and then we use it as a background vocal and we harmonize it. And it's just like a really catchy thing. And that you can't really think that into existence. It has to just come from you.
Hmm. What percentage of arranging, and I'm sorry, I keep dipping back to how you work with the pentatonics, but what percent of it is non-cognitive and largely ear-based versus cognitive, write down the notes, teach it later?
Well, it's always different. So like they do a lot of arrangements on their own too. So all the sing-off arrangements, most of the sing-off arrangements they did, just the five of them sitting around, no paper, no computer, just singing. And they would come up with things that way. And then there are other times when I'll have to arrange something for them and they'll be in another country and it'll just be me and my computer writing everything down. And then most of the time it happens somewhere in between, so that we're in the room together, we're coming up with stuff. I like to just get all the ideas out, all the good intuitive stuff. And then once I have it all down, I organize it and think about it in a way that makes the most sense. So it's I use both very frequently, and you can't do it without either. It's, you kind of need both sides to keep it organized.
Good. Interesting to know, to hear you say that. I heard Take Six a month ago down at Matt Falker's festival. I don't know if you know that.
Uh-huh.
Down at MiraCosta College. But they were performing, and then I met, for the first time, I met Mark Kibble, actually, from Take Six. And, you know, of course, I'm a humongous fan of him and his writing and his singing. And we were chatting about their process. And actually, Cheryl Benteen from the Manhattan Transfer, who is doing some co-concerts with Take Six, was telling me a little bit about what she observed in their process. She said one time she was seeing them with headphones on or whatever, and they were all listening to their own parts and studying. So in the room, it was quiet, and they were just listening to their individual part. And then at some point, they all put the headphones down or whatever and sang, and bang, there it was. They could sing whatever they had all just been listening to, you know, because it was just done by ear and it was very organic that way.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, I love working like that when I can. And, you know, I like making learning tracks for people. If I'm doing an arrangement for a high school group or, you know, any other group that I'm working with, I always like it when they ask me to do tracks, because I get to hear it kind of fully realized. I get to work out any kinks that I may have missed if it was just on paper. And then, of course, they have a whole new level of learning and stylistic things that I'm going for that they wouldn't know if they just read the notes.
Yeah. So let's talk about the A Cappella Academy, which I remember when you and I saw each other at the Real Group concert backstage later, you were telling me about it. And I think that was the very first year you guys were starting it.
And I think so.
Sounds like a really cool thing.
Yeah, it's the thing I think that I'm most proud of. I love getting to work with kids and just passing on our knowledge. And I have an incredibly talented and knowledgeable staff of kind of young a cappella artists. From all different groups and professional groups, collegiate groups, who are doing music in other forms, all different styles. We basically audition kids from all over the world. We got 500 video auditions this year, and we narrowed it down to 72. So we have 72 kids coming from as far away as Japan and Italy, and Egypt, and so they're all coming to LA this summer, sleepaway camp, and it's 11 days. They get sorted into small groups according to style. We have a lot of different kind of vibes. So we have like a jazz group, we have a funk group, we have a female R&B group, we have a straight ahead pop group, we have like a bluegrass folk group. So we kind of place the kids wherever their vocal strengths are and where they can shine the brightest.
That's great. And that takes place in LA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's
at Mount St. Mary's College.
Spectacular venue.
It's amazing. Love it there.
Up in the hills, you've got these vistas of Los Angeles, and it's this beautiful old Spanish architecture at this university up there. So that's great. And it sounds like because you get so many submissions that you're able to pick folks that are already pretty into the game. And
definitely, yeah. We pick some incredible talent. It's really mind-blowing. The staff always just laughs about how ridiculously talented these kids are and how much better they are than us at a lot of things. But it's always great to be able to teach them kind of from our experience, and a lot of them love to just riff all the time and just teach them about taste and subtlety and just kind of take their incredible raw talent to the next level.
Hmm. Is there a concert or a recording or anything that...
We do a full camp album. So each small group, we have 8 small groups. They each record one track there. And then we also have a live concert on July 10th, and that'll be all the groups. They learn 3 songs, so they'll each do a little set. And then we also have a choir comprised of all the campers, and we do a bunch of fun works in that group too.
Great. Just curious, you did mention the value of your instrumental background earlier, and I know you play piano, and I'm always a big advocate of singers learning to play basic piano, just because, at least in my world, which is mostly the vocal jazz world, you know, it's really, really an asset to being able to hear those complex chords, you know, and learn to sight read the music and stuff. Do you have theory classes at a cappella academy or?
We have a half hour musicianship class every day. So that is basically, it's more or less sight reading class. It's basic theory. We don't have a lot of time to get into anything too deep, but we actually split up into 5 levels. So we have, you know, kids who are incredible singers who can't read a note of music, who come in and hopefully by the end kind of are taken to the next level. And then we have our super advanced readers reading really hard stuff and just having a lot of fun and improving. But yeah, we definitely put a lot of value on that and just on overall musicianship and just able to walk into any situation, whether it be a gig or a recording session or anything, and just kind of be comfortable and being able to nail it.
Mm-hmm. What is the age group of the camp again?
It's 13 to 18.
Oh, okay. So if a 19-year-old that just graduated high school wanted to go, could they?
We make small exceptions. If they're an old high schooler, then yes, they can go. But anyone who's kind of in college and isn't still 17, they can't go.
Okay. Yeah. So, Ben, I don't know much about the you that is not musical. And, you know, for so many people that are in the music business, when they're just doing really a lot of interesting things and so thoroughly passionately involved in what they're doing, there really isn't that much outside of music. But, you know, we don't know each other that well. And I'm very curious, like, if you weren't doing music, you took a day off or you took a little vacation or whatever, what would you be doing?
Good question. I don't get those times often. There's always something to be done. I like to hike. I like to ski a lot. I went to Mammoth with my roommates and my dad a couple months ago. We had a blast. Beach sometimes, hanging out with friends, family. I don't have any like weird hobbies or anything. I kind of wish I did.
Maybe later in life.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't collect anything.
Yeah. Some people, you know, like Janice Siegel, for example, is a real foodie, so she cooks, you know.
Yeah.
And
totally.
Other people like you enjoy hiking and actually spend a lot of time doing it and stuff. Like myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you like to do?
Oh, I'm a real lover of the outdoors, passionate, and I have spoken this on other podcasts. I won't go into too much detail, but we do, we go out in a Jeep to faraway places, not real far away, but, you know, Southern Utah and the Southern California deserts. And we go out to places where there are no other people. And we plop down tents and we go exploring in mud caves or abandoned mines. Or exploring different hiking trails. Backpacking. We backpacked the Grand Canyon last year from North Rim to South Rim. This year, we're going to be going into the longest slot canyon in the world in the world, which is located in Southern Utah. And of course, the name escapes me right now, but it's like 13 miles one way of narrow canyon.
Yeah.
And then we'll backpack, we'll sleep there, you know, at the end one night and then backpack out a different way. So.
That sounds awesome.
I need that. That's the way I decompress.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I garden some and cook, like I grow my healthy lettuces and herbs and things, and I enjoy cooking with them.
Nice.
Yeah. So, let's see. Who do you like to listen to?
I never really go back to anything specifically, but I love to just find new kind of not super well-known artists who just really vibe with me. And one of those is Bernhoft. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's from Norway, I'm pretty sure.
How do you spell that?
Bernhoft. And he's just killer. Got a ridiculous voice and just funky grooves, and it's exquisite. And it's, what is crazy about him is that he, when he speaks, he has a very thick accent. He kind of barely speaks English in a way. And then when you hear him sing, he sounds like he's like from the South and just singing the blues. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Just the authenticity of it and how much he's really listened and dug in, that he's able to create that sound.
Yes. That's great. I love it when people from other countries are able to, you know, if they're speaking in singing in English, to make it sound like American English, if it's blues or jazz.
Yeah.
Right. It's not easy to do, because I can't imagine if I went and I tried to sound like a native Norwegian.
Exactly.
Probably going to be a little tough.
Yeah. And then another artist is Erin Allen Kane. And she just came out with her first EP, and it's amazing. It's really killing.
How did you learn about these people?
Just through friends, mostly. Erin Allen Kane, actually my camper from camp, tweeted about her. And I checked it out and I was just blown away. And then Bernhoft, there was a video that was going around a few years ago of him looping himself, playing guitar and playing keys and singing. And so that's how I found out about him.
Yeah. I mean, that is one of the good things about Facebook and other social media, is that, you know, I mean, it's got its annoyances probably in a big way, but you can really, your horizons can be really opened to lots of new fun things.
Absolutely. And, you know, yeah, people often ask, you know, what acapella I listen to, what my acapella influences are. But really, most of my influences are just music like this that I find, and I'm listening to the horns, I'm listening to the background vocals, I'm listening to the bass lines, the grooves, and like, that's really where most of my influence comes from, and not really from other acapella stuff.
So now is the time in this podcast where we torture you with a thing called the double time round. Which means fast, and it means fast questions that you get to answer as spontaneously and as correctly or incorrectly as you wish, but we just...
Uh-oh.
Yep. So they have to do with music and non-music and anything and nothing, so...
Great.
All right, your game?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, you got something like 6 seconds per question, all right?
Okay.
Good luck. Here it goes. Number one, what is the square root of pi?
Oh, geez. These kind of questions?
Number two, what annoys you the most about other musicians or people in general?
People vibing each other out and being too cocky and talking down to people.
Good, correct. Number three, what are the notes in a D7 sharp 9 chord?
Oh, geez. D, F sharp, A, sharp 9. It's F and C.
You got it.
I think I got all of them.
Yay, you got it. Number four, how old will you be when or if you die?
I think I'll be 85.
Okay, correct.
I don't want to live too old.
Okay. All right. You say that now. Wait till you're 85. See what you say. What's your favorite movie?
Oh, I don't have a favorite movie, but Best in Show is one of my favorites.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
All of those. It's Coen Brothers,
right? Yeah, all the Christopher Guests.
Oh, Christopher Guest.
Mighty Wind is also up there.
Oh, gosh. Awesome. Best in Show. I could watch it over and over, and I have. Yeah. And question number, whatever it is, six. If the Jones family was driving from San Francisco to New York at 55 miles per hour, and the Smiths were doing the same drive but stopped at Starbucks three times along the way, who would get there first?
Pass.
Okay, very good. You won. You got 12 points.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, where can people know everything about you and all the things you're up to?
I don't update my website very much, but my website is thebenbram.com, and that has contact info and all that. And then on Facebook, at facebook.com/thebenbram, and twitter.com/thebenbram, and instagram.com/thebenbram. So I'm The Ben Bram on all platforms.
Okay. okay. Very good. Anything about your camp?
Yeah. My camp is closed this year. But next year we're going to have auditions, for next summer, starting in the fall. And our website is Acapella Academy. The A is shared in the middle. So it's acapellaacademy.org, or you can just Google Acapella Academy, for more information.
Okay. Well, very good. Is there any like last words of wisdom? Like, I'd like to share whatever we can with our listeners on the Mish Music Talk podcast.
Yeah.
And you've already shared a lot. Thank you for that. But if you had any final tips, wisdoms, anything that comes to mind as, gosh, I'd like to just turn people onto this idea.
Yeah. People ask a lot, you know, how to, you know, just general advice I have of people wanting to do music. And the thing that I always come back to is that it's a friend industry. And most of everything that I get and my friends get as far as gigs and connections and opportunities come from other people that they've worked with. So regardless of how talented someone might be, it's often the people who are just fun to be around that end up getting gigs, even if they're not the most talented in their field. Just the fact that they are a good person to be around and they're reliable, and you're going to have a good time with them, speaks a lot.
I love that you said that. And I'm going to take away this quote from it. Quote, it's a friend industry.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. I had never heard it said quite like that, but you're right. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody can be awesomely, brilliantly talented, but if they're not reliable, for example, or a fun, nice person to be around, it's not going to work. People don't want to work
absolutely
with them.
And that can work in other businesses, in certain places where you don't really have to work together. But you know, everything in music is collaboration and all that, so it's important.
Okay. Well, thank you. I wish you the very best, Ben.
Thank you. You too.
Yes. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for today's podcast. And please don't forget to subscribe. Visit www.mishmusic.com/podcast for more info about today's guest and links to products and people that were discussed. See you next time.